Rich.
Thank you very much, Shelley.
Thanks,
Shelley. Good evening, everybody. I'm an addict. My name's Rich.
Hi, Rich.
Hi, everybody. I'm extremely nervous. I'm nearly to the point of feeling sick, you know, and but that's okay. I'm going to just... I'll talk, I like to believe I'm not in control of this, and I don't have a great relationship with certainly the God I grew up with. I just know that there is a power greater than me out there, and hopefully, turn that stuff over and see what happens. I mean, the thing is that I've been coming into NA now for a long time, it's a long time to me anyway. It's not half of my using yet, or even a third of my using, but, I've been coming here for a few days now. And so, what I'm aware of is that, this program, because you guys told me when I walked in here, was to keep coming back, and that's exactly what I've done. So, the program's integrated in me, it's sort of like, part of it's in my being. I'm still at war with the illness. It was on me on the tube on the way here. I was having a fight with it. I entered the nut, and it was winning, felt my hands going all sort of sweaty. And my pounds and everything. And do you know what's great, really, about today is that, for the most time, not all the time, but for the most time, is that I've learned that I have thoughts rather than being my thoughts. And I've learned that I can also be an observer of my thoughts rather than, my thoughts having a grip on me in the way that they used to. And I believe my thoughts are my illness. I believe it lives, my illness, my dis-ease lives in my thinking, my thinking's defected, and my defective thinking puts me at dis-ease with self and dis-ease with others. And as a result of that, I find it very difficult at times to be in relationship with self, and find it very difficult also to be in relationship with you guys. Because I, even though I'm saying I can distinguish the fact that I'm not my thoughts, I still go into the conversation, enter the thoughts, and it gets me, you've probably experienced something very similar to me, I would have thought, if you sat in this room. A typical example of that sometimes is when you're on the way to work, and you're having an argument with your partner or somebody else that's in your group conscience. You've had a bit of a disagreement with, and they say this, and you say that, and then they say this, and then you say that, and by the time you get to work, you hate them, you know what I mean? And you're going to weigh them in when you see them next time, and all that. I once heard that sort of like 85% of, 85% of any difficulty in my life's not even happening, where it's happening is up here, and generally that's where my fear lives, and what I do know is that I'm in a room full of people that, that love me, whatever that might be to you. They want me to win in this and they want me to stay clean. And I don't know everybody in here, but, we have a struggle, options, using is still an option to me. That's why I carry on coming here. I do hear that some people say using is not an option. And on days I thought, actually, I'd probably rather die without a program and do myself in than use again. Because I haven't got another user pin me, but the reality is I must have, because otherwise I'd be recovered and I wouldn't need to be here. I can't come to a meeting and then say I haven't got another user pin me. I carry on coming here because I need to be here. At first I thought it's because you need me, it's weird that, because I was talking about service. I remember being on a convention committee once and for a number of years actually, and then what happened is I left the committee and the convention still went, and I thought, cheeky bastards. it was surprising, but that's the one thing about Narcotics Anonymous, isn't it, because you were saying it earlier, even in our ego, it's sort of like, it's going to go on without me regardless. I'm just like one small part of a bigger cog, a bigger universe. And I've learnt a little bit about a bigger universe through service in Narcotics Anonymous, and what I mean by that is like, the world being about me, it's all about me, And by the way, just because I have a few days behind me, it still is on Sundays, because the one thing I'm not is a spiritual guru. I'm an addict trying to carry a message to the best of my ability, living these principles in my affairs, you know, what happened is when I started doing service for it, and you know, after a little while, maybe a couple of years probably, it started to become about the group, you know, because what happened is I was in the group conscience and I started to get, you know, tradition two, you know. And then what happened from that is that then I went to the area and it started to become about the area. And slightly, but, you know, as the process went on, what happened is that I came to get out of me through the gift given to me called service through Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and then from there I managed to then, you know, I went to the region and I started to hear from the RD, you know, about Europe and about the, you know, the struggling communities that we still have in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, because you were saying earlier, you know, walking into here and finding out that, you know, there's a load of people in this meeting, you know, and it's great that, you know, there's so many people here. And yet, you know, we're so fortunate to be here and have what we have in the UK, you know, and I'm sure many here, as and I've heard many say before, that, you know, they've been abroad and they've seen what happens. And I remember going to Latvia on the Russian border once to a convention, trying to support what was going on in Europe, like, you know, playing my little part, and went to a meeting and walking down this road, it was like something like Nightmare on Elm Street. It was like, had, you know, trees and really sort of dark lights sort of on the, that sounds silly, doesn't it? Dark lights. Sort of going down the street, you know, and the illness. Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, going down the street, and then we got to this rehab, and we went downstairs, and there was about 7 or 8 recovering addicts in this cellar, you know, and they had one bit of literature, it's a PI leaflet, and it was how it works and why in their own language, and my heart went out to them. I felt touched, you know, and I just thought, how do they do this? You know, how do they stay clean? You know, and it's a therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel, you know. And I know that we say these things and recite them, but when, you know, because I've, over time, had a willingness to go out, and also because I've had fun, by the way, it's not because, you know, I'm not a spiritual guru, as I said, but, you know, going out, having fun, checking things out, I've had an opportunity to see stuff, you know, and the power of what us guys do when we become willing to step up and do services, fellowship, the value that creates in the lives of the people, not only that come to NA, but in the lives of the wider community, is phenomenal. You know, through every individual that's sitting in this room, specifically, you know, if I talk about me, the effect that being here has had on my sisters, being on my mother, and then the wider community, and then my mother becomes easier to live with for her husband, who then becomes a better dad for his parents, because, you know, and it's sort of like, and that's a ripple effect. And I'd like to say welcome to you, my mate, you know, welcome, you know, you're in the right place, keep coming back, and, you know, it's lovely to see you with your mum here tonight, and that's the same for any newcomer that might be in the room, and, you know, for anybody with just a desire to stop using, you know, please keep coming, you know. Matt, I suppose, you know, how did I get here? You know, it's 27 years of using, really, and, you know, I'm 46 on my next birthday, and it was 27 years of using. It was various times in jails and you know, numerous rehabs, and the first one being in 1989 and the last one being in 2005. You know, God willing, it will be my last one, you know, and you know, the journey getting here wasn't easy. You know, I do remember, you know, because people talk about, okay, well, why are we here? You know, I was talking about, you know, what I heard you saying was that the drugs were your solution. They were certainly my solution in the beginning, you know, they became a solution to the dis-ease, you know, the conversation in my head. You know, it lessened, you know, the voice became less and I became fearless, you know, as a result of using. And so I sought more because I had a sense of self in my using, you know, initially. And then obviously it became a problem, and then it led to me being here in NA, you know. But I tried many different ways of getting clean. You know, I had the Wednesday bag, the Friday bag. You know, I had the not using heroin, but sitting in the pub buying Nick Gear off all the grafters down the town, whilst being on a 150 mil methadone script and buying Nick Gear. But I was doing well, you know, that sort of go as well. You know, and I went into numerous detox centres. You know, I can laugh at some of the stuff now that sort of happened back then. When I look back on it, it was horrific. You know, the things that I put myself through in my using, I would have put my worst enemy through, to be honest with you. You know, and still even today when I'm caught up in the illness, you know, I still wouldn't even talk to my worst enemy like that. And, you know, it's the way I talk to myself, you know, even today. You know, one of the times I remember going into this place and they give you like a five-day detox, you know, and they put you to sleep for numerous days, and at the end of it they wake you up and they give you naltrexone, you know, and you wake up like a bag of shit, you know, and it's sort of like, and I remember waking up after this, and I'd lied before I'd gone in there, because I don't know about you, but my using was to such a point I didn't know how to even cut down. That wasn't in my language. I used that up to the last day of every single rehab I did. I was scoring that morning, you know, because the obsession and the compulsion to use is far greater than me. You know, I completely got powerlessness because I couldn't do it. And so I went into this rehab and I told this doctor, you know, because I've been given urine samples that wasn't mine, you know, from a bottle under the arm, squeezing it through a tube, I've done all that sort of stuff, and, you know, warming it up in the microwave, bombing down there on the car heater, you know, all that sort of stuff, trying to hand him it over and, you know, pretending it was mine. And, you know, even though I got up a pregnant woman once and he goes, "Oh, we've got a surprise for you, you're pregnant." Didn't really, but yeah, you know. But I wouldn't mind it even if I was. But but what happened? So what happened? I'm in this detox, and so they put me to sleep for days and days. I'd lied, like I said. I was on, like, you know, I don't know, excessive amounts of it. And they woke up, they gave me this naltrexone, and my legs just buckled from underneath me, and I sort of like fell to the floor in this quivering wreck. You know, them telling me, you know, "Welcome back to reality, you're now detoxed, you know, you're going home in 2 days." So I'm sort of like, you know, they've gone out the room and I'm still trying to keep my dignity. I think I'd had a good graft on before I'd gone there. So I got like a pair of Acme scooter and trousers when they was out, you know, back in the day, and a Burberry top. So anyway, you know, I won't wear them now because actually, for anyone that didn't probably know about clothing at that time, I probably looked more like Rupert Bear than anything. You know, thinking I was cool because they were felt sort of folded up on the floor, you know, and yeah, that was me, you know what I mean? And proceeded to get out of bed to grab a bath, collapsed on the floor. As I'm sort of crawling along the floor to get there, I sort of crap myself and say, "It's all over the floor now, it's all over me," and it's a true story, it was awful, it was horrific, you know, and in my madness, I had to call these nurses, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm like, "Help, help," you know, on the floor. So they come in, these two nurses, and they carry me into the bathroom, and I'm covered in feces and everything, you know, and in my madness, I know when they looked at me, it's still that stuff that they're into me, then they're like me, you know. I was like, you know, and I really believe that stuff, you know. But sort of like leaving there, you know, like wanting to give them a wink on the way out, and they have to scoot down there. Legs buckled, sort of arms over my mum and her husband, sort of like getting dragged out there, going, "Yeah, I'll give you a phone later, love." So, you know, it wasn't nice. You know what I mean? It wasn't nice. And, you know, that Sunday morning, you know, and you see everyone going out to work or whatever, and you're sort of hanging out and you're trying to find a graft, especially like back in the 80s and things like that. You know, there's like shops didn't open, did they, on Sundays and stuff. It was terrible, you know. But, you know, I remember going past sort of like, you know, feeling really less than, you know, feeling really awkward going past sort of building sites when all the guys are there. And, you know, I had a real issue anyway, you know, about who I was as a bloke, my own sexuality. It was like, it was dead confusing. It was all happening in my head again. You know what I mean? And so I'm walking past this building site. There's all these guys there with the big tattoos and all that, you know. And I'm on my way to go graft and you know. I mean, the crazy thing is like, you know, I look like a bag of shit, but, you know, in my not, I thought, you know, all right, you went out last night drinking, yeah, could, you know, how fast are you walking up that ladder with the bricks in the odd carrier, you know, and I bet you can't do what I'm about to do, because I'm hanging out, and I'm going down to the pound shop, and I'm going to fill this sports bag full of dairy milk, try doing that one then, you know. But it's, and that's what it was, you know, I remember many a morning, you know when you're grafting, it's done. Everybody knows you everywhere and you're sort of kamikazing around the town. And I did used to do that, pound bars of chocolate. And then I used to go, they were a pound, but I sold them for a pound because if shops were empty, they didn't go, they were £2. You know what I mean? So they thought they were getting a good deal. But I'm telling you what, you try to be 7 stone, skinny as hell, a bit of a disability going on, walking up with them, you know what I mean? It was like, it was hard graft. It was like, you know, the way I look at it, using didn't stop. It was a 24/7 job, and it was hard graft, you know. And that's what brought me to the ruins of NA, was that stuff. You know, all that stuff, because it was non-stop. It was for years, you know. So I can laugh at it all now, because it's quite funny in my insanity. You know, but the reality of it was, is the pain was, is that what happened before I came into recovery, every morning I used to get up and I'd sit on the settee in my living room and I'd just cry. You know what I mean? I'd break down. It was like, I so much didn't want to use, I so much didn't want to go graft, but I couldn't stop. Do you know what I mean? And the pain of being in that dilemma, you know, it was awful. You know, and then I'd sit there, you know, with something that I know I'm going to get nothing off. Yeah, and I would jab myself and jab myself and jab myself and jab myself, and there'd be blood and it'd be down my arms, and you know, and it was just vile, you know, and yet I would be going, please God, just this last one, just this last one, and I'd take it and it'd do nothing, yeah, and I'd get up and repeat the same insanity and go back out down the town doing that stuff again on the graph to go back home and have that effect, you know, and that's what it was like, that's how it was. You know, that's my identification to using. That was my using, you know. And I've done all the high class stuff, you know, as I said, the joke. I've done the smoking cheese and toenails as well. You know, like you're looking for your last pipe and you've done like an 18 or whatever, and then you're on the floor looking at cheese and toenails, believing that this white pile of mixed white colours is going to get your buzz higher than what the 80 you've smoked all over. And then you light it and it goes... and it tears vile, and then you do it again the next day. Yeah. Okay. And before I move on, I do want to say one more, because this is the other painful thing, you know, and this is painful. I went out with a girl for 6 years before coming to recovery. I couldn't trust her. I'd rather shit myself than leave the house while she was cutting the gear up. You know what I mean? As soon as I was going, before I was going to have crack, I started, it was like laxative. I started, I needed the toilet, but I wasn't moving. You know what I mean? You know? And that was even whilst being on opiates, by the way, a strong anxiety goes on, you know what I mean? And then you sit there, don't you, and it's on the mirror, and you're going, cutting, cutting, cutting. And then you do it for about an hour, and then you split our pick. So she's cut it, she moves your half over to yours, you decide it's okay, and as soon as you've made that decision, her half goes about twice bigger. It grows. Hold on, do it again. Yeah. And then you get down, don't you? Like the spirit level, do you know what I mean? Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. You know what I mean? You know, there's no more of that going on. You know. But in my own head, it still puts me in the cabaret, you know what I mean? With a pocket full of this, pocket full of that. It never happened anyway, you know. But it does, you know, especially earlier doors, you know, because I forget about it. Now, because I've got a bit of time around me, what happens is when things get difficult, what I do is I attend more meetings, or I phone more people, or I'll talk more. You know, it's automatic, like, it's like automatic now. I don't sit, you know, in that pain, you know, I don't want to. And yet, you know, I forget... Because I've got it, how difficult it is sometimes for the people that are still coming in and they're trying to get it, or for the people that have got 30 days behind them, you know, when you are going down the street and it does put you in the cabaret and it does put you, you know what I mean, and it's with a girl sat next door to you, do you know what I mean, with a pocket full of this and a pocket full of that. I mean, that's a joke, isn't it? Because if he's anything like me, don't matter the girl sat next to you anyway, because he's not doing all that after a few glasses of crack, are you? Do you know what I mean? You know. And that reminds me, one of the first times that I ever felt different. Right, I remember that because, you know, we talk about feeling different and not feeling good enough. Mine started, like, I remember once getting picked last for a relay race, and in that moment when I was 6 years old, I made a decision. The decision was that I wasn't good enough. And that was different to other people. And I have a disability. I have a trapped nerve in my brain, and it disorientates the way that I walk. And I don't talk about it much because I don't, you know, I'm not disabled. I'm just, you know, I'm not able to do some of the stuff that other people might be able to do, and I live with it. It's empowering. In fact, it's a driver in a way, you know. But I remember at that moment not feeling quite good enough, And that stuck with me all my life. And one of the things that I've got to in recovery, what I unearthed for myself, is that I never actually lived out of any of the facts. Yeah, what I lived out of all the time was an interpretation of what I thought was happening. You know, and that's where my fear lies. Because what happened, the fact is, on that day, is I got picked last for a relay race. The meaning I gave it was, is that I'm not good enough. And so the fact that I got picked last wasn't the thing that created the pain. It was the meaning that I gave it on that day that created the pain. And so what happens is 85% of stuff that doesn't happen in my life is the pain that I create for me. And in our text, it talks about, you know, we are the creator of our own pain. You know, and I started to live with that. And that is the reason that I come here. You know, one of the other things growing up, and I'm going to move on in a minute, but one of the other things growing up, I remember being in school, and you get to about 13, you know, you're in puberty, and I'm in the showers, it's we've just done gym, and I'm walking around, and these guys are like looking, I'm like looking at them, and like looking at me, and I thought, yes, you've been ripped, do you know what I mean? You know, it was like, and that lived with me for ages, because I was measuring myself against other people, you know, and thought that, it was like, seriously, this stuff, like, did mean in relationships, you know what I mean? And I suffered abuse as a boy as well. And what happened as a result of that is I remember one day, I was about 15 and this guy, you know, he tried to get on with me anyway, and he got me out of my nut, and I woke up and, you know, he was trying to undo my trousers. And I ran because, you know, I'd had this a similar experience when I was younger, and I remember being really scared and running home. And what happened on that, as I was running home that evening, is that there was like almost like a thing wanting me to go back there. It was like myself was drawing myself back. I don't know why up till this day, by the way. I haven't got a clue, and it doesn't matter why. But that's what happened. You know, whether it was about control or whatever it was about. And in that moment, I made a decision about me, and the decision was that I must be gay as a result of that. And now this isn't a slur or anything on, you know, sexuality. It really isn't about that. But I grew up in a world where I used to hang about with sort of like, you know, all the crazy guys in the school in the early 80s, you know, the casuals, and I used to go to the football matches and hooligans and all that, which I didn't like, by the way. You know, I was scared stiff, but I still did it anyway. It was still that part of wanting to feel part of something. But I remember all this stuff had this effect on me about, you know, being different, not being good enough. And because of the world that I lived in, I wasn't able to vocalise what my head had told me. And so what happened, it manifested in me for years and years. And as a result of that, and even in recovery, I was unable to have relationships with men. You know, because what happened is I was scared of them finding the secret. And the secret was is that I was unsure about my sexuality. And it was a judgment. I had a judgment on it. You know, the same as I had a judgment on a lot of things. I wasn't open-minded enough. I wasn't culturally diverse. I wasn't aware of individuals. I was, you know, because I was very much, you know, I was in the disease. And disease is about, part of it is about the isolation. It tells us that in step one. You know, and so what as a result is, I want to look for the differences in you because I don't want to have to come here. I don't want to have to be in relationships. I had judgments. And the pain that I created through my own judgment, the judgment of myself, kept me in isolation for a number of years, and it's very painful. You know, and when I came to NA and I was able to relieve that stuff with a sponsor, you know, and say that darkness can't exist where there's light. And when I put that out there, it just left me. You know, something left me. And I was able to be free with myself. You know, and it was okay to be me. You know, and there's been many incidences, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous where, you know, but it wasn't, what I've found, it hasn't been so much about the larger things in NA that's kept me grit. It's sometimes a really smaller stuff. You know, when I came here, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to walk in the room, and like you, I wanted to be up here sharing too. You know, my first meeting, I remember going into the large Wednesday night meeting, and one of my first thoughts is, I'm going to be taking this meeting soon. You know, and that's how it was for me. But the real truth was is that I was really scared, and I was feared. You know, I had a lot of fear going on. And that was because, you know, my low self-esteem, you know, I couldn't tell you how life really was for me out there. You know, this stuff that I'm sharing with you right now is the intimate stuff. You know, it's very intimate stuff. And I feel vulnerable telling you. But I know there's no need to be afraid because I have to stay real to who I am and what it is that I'm dealing with. Because I know the power of the illness. You know, it kept me out there. You know, and the thing is because I'm able to be with myself through keep coming back here and because I've done the work, I don't have to fear anything no more. You know, I still have people who love me. I have friends who love me. I have other males in my life that love me. You know, I have a partner that loves me. You know, I've got engaged in NA. You know, and that was a massive thing for me. You know, it was like, when I looked at my step four, what happened is every relationship that I ever went into, yeah, or any scenario that I ever went into, is I would get fearful and I would run. Now, my fear was, I was scared of the fear of rejection. I was scared of the fear of not being good enough, the fear of being unlovable, the fear of being different. You know, and so every decision was made based on that fear. You know, and since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, what's happened is I've had the ability to start loving myself. And some of the changes that I've made, like getting engaged since being in NA, is about loving Richard, because Richard deserves it. You know, I deserve to be loved and I deserve to love others. And that's the change I've been able to make. So it isn't about the ring on the finger, it's about the commitment internally that I've made to be with another individual without the fear of them doing whatever they do and the fear of I'm doing what, because I'm powerless anyway. You know, it isn't the same no more. I don't get gripped with fear when I text and I don't get a reply in 10 minutes. I'm not on the phone asking where they are, pretending that it's about, I'm concerned about them, when mine need to control. You know, because I am scared what they're doing. They're doing this, they're doing that. And my mistrust of other individuals, what I've learned, has been around the mistrust of me. And what I've often done is I've projected that stuff onto other individuals, you know, whether I've been in relationship. But what's happened, you know, and I've learnt in NA, you know, through sponsorship and through all the other things, you know, to become intimate. I give a little bit of me, you know, like I gave myself to you tonight. And I know that you're there for me even with that, you know. And I know that in predecessing years, and you know, the time that's gone by, people have given me a little bit of them. And it's into me, you see, the intimacy, the power of what we're about, the therapeutic value of allowing the darkness that exists in my head to come out, yeah, without fear, because what it does is give me freedom. Not from active addiction, from the disease of addiction 8 years down the line. Because it's not the drugs. The drugs is what I do. The disease is what I'm dealing with. And I need a daily reprieve from the disease of addiction, because I know when I was in this fellowship for 2 years, I walked around. I was in the fellowship 6 months, I was in the rehab 18 months. But what happened is I came in here and I got sponsored because that's what people said. I didn't really like what was going on here. I certainly wasn't going to believe I was powerless, and I didn't like the word God, you know. And what happened is I ran around on my own will, getting involved in all the stuff that I was doing, and it got really, really painful without a program. My experience is that freedom is in the step work, freedom is in the sponsorship, freedom is in putting myself in the centre and being willing to do service. Not because I'm a spiritual guru, because it's good for me. You know, being here tonight and even doing the share has kept me clean tonight. Now, I'm getting loads out of study here, you know, but I hope that somebody else in here does too, specifically the newcomers and the long timers. Because, you know, my experience is, it's, you know, the long timers are the people that have been around you that have been giving, 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 giving in order for us to still be here today. You know, and pain, primary purpose of NA, it says in there, the primary purpose, Tradition 5 talks about, we carry the message to the addict who still suffers. It doesn't necessarily say the newcomer, but we know the pain of the newcomer, so we love them anyway. And we welcome them to our meetings by giving them a hug. But, what, you know, I'm dealing with a progressive, cunning, baffling illness, and I still need you as much as any newcomer does. You know, I still need you. Because I really believe that, you know, that the using and the drugs aren't going to be the thing that creates the pain in my life. I've seen it already. What creates the pain is Richard. You know, what creates the pain is me. In my fear, acting out, defects of character, shortcomings, falling short, ripping myself off. And I've had to deal with many of them in recovery. And like I say, that, you know, some of the big stuff I've told you about that happened, you know, in my life, isn't the stuff that's been the cringy thing for me in that person. So I got £700 in debt on my electric when I first came to NA, when I was around NA for a little while. And I was scared stiff of telling you, because I was in meetings sharing for looking good. You know? I wanted you to know that I knew all the literature, you know what I mean? I knew everything about it. I was here to tell you how to do it, you know what I mean? You know, and I couldn't grasp, you know, to say, I'm £700 in debt, you know? And I found the courage in me to say, look, I'm not living too well by myself. I'm £700 in debt. And someone said, yeah, just get a meter pot on your wall. It's all right. They'll just take a fiver off you a week. I was like, oh, will it? You know, because I didn't know nothing like that. I didn't know that stuff. You know, that's not what it was about. But I didn't want you to know I was scared, you know, because you might judge me. So that was the stuff that I had to deal with. You know, I remember going downtown early doors for a bed. Yeah, and so I went downtown for this bed. The illness is on, it's manifesting as it does, you know, computer sex, you know, all this sort of stuff. So I'm downtown anyway, and I've seen this jumper. I thought, yeah, that looks nice on the way to the bed. And I didn't make a passage through the shop I was in, and I bought this jumper. Now, I felt good momentarily, and I even looked good, but I still didn't have anything to sleep on. You know what I mean? And this is the illness, isn't it? It's like, you know, I'm still looking to think that the solution somehow is outside of myself. You know, I still think the solution today is outside of myself some days, you know, but I know that it isn't, you know. So I go downtown the second week to get this bed, and I come back with another jumper. Anyway, I couldn't make it past this shop. So what happened is my mate said to me, he said, I tell you what, look, I'll come downtown with you and we'll go pick this bed up because I know where there's some great beds. Anyway, so we went downtown together. And this is the third week. And guess what I came back with? Eh? No, a bed, yeah. You know? And what happened is I started understanding the principle of, you know, the therapeutic value and a power greater than myself. Because what happened in my insanity is I was still under the belief that I could do this life by myself and I was unable to tell you I couldn't. You know, but when I started to put it out there and I started to learn by keep coming back, what happened? A power greater than myself, which was another person, invited themselves into my life. You know? And they came downtown, and what happened is I came back with a bed. I know that's, you know, sounds crazy. But, you know, two of us together was greater than me on my own. And as a result of that, I got what I needed. You know, to go downtown probably for the third week, you know, it would probably be an insanity. You know, insanity meaning doing the same thing and expecting different results. You know? And that's how I've learned. It's been through little things like that, you know, and I've learnt the power that's in here, and I've learnt the power through conversation, you know. So the journey of recovery hasn't been easy in the same way that the journey of using wasn't easy, but it's been great, you know. The freedom that I have today, you know, one of my, as I was saying earlier, you know, just, and these might only sound like little things, but for me they're amazing things. When I was quite new about the fellowship, I live near the beach, I'm down from Portsmouth, I've come up here tonight with a couple of friends and my partner, and we're up here for the weekend to have some fun. And what happened is that I used to get invited down the beach, and because my legs were real thin and I was obsessing, it's still all about me, you know, the pain of being all about you, and the world revolves around you. What I'd do is I would say, will you come down the beach, Rich? And I would, up straight away, what I'd go to is wearing a pair of shorts, my legs look skinny, you look like a bag of crap, don't go, fear, ooh, you know, and then I go, no, it's all right, I'm doing something, you know what I mean? You know, and in that moment, I felt great. It was like, I've done it, you know, I've got away with it, you know, but what really happened is that I would sit down, or I would go home, and I would be by myself, and the disease had won, and it would instill that, you see, you're not good enough, are you? You know. And it was experiential avoidance. I was trying to avoid the experience of going down the beach because of the pain that I created about who Richard is as an individual. And I had many, many of them. That was like the step four cycle that I started off by talking about. You know, and I've managed to break that stuff. So I'm in a relationship. I've become employable, you know, and I've got a great job, and I've got, you know, a real opportunity to create value in the lives of other people. And it's very hard, but very, you know, very rewarding. And you know, I've moved into a house with my partner. She's got two children. You know, through one thing or another, I never had the opportunity to father myself. And so now I've been given the opportunity, you know, and he's presented me with the opportunity, as I've life, and, you know, and to be a father to two young lads, you know, and I really value that. I really value that, you know, and it's testing at times. You know, being in a relationship is testing for me. You know, and the illness still works on me in that. and it's looking for a way out, and I'm dealing with it. And every day I'm still getting up and I'm going to work and I'm dealing with it. I don't know about you, but my first thought when I open my eyes isn't, hey, another day. It's like, oh, God's sake. And you've got to get out of bed. It's, you know, you've got to wash the pots. You know, you've got, it's like, that's my first response to everything, because I'm just a lazy bastard. You know what I mean? You know, I want to get, I still want to cut corners. So everything's, you know, dealing, living with this is like, it really is about action. You know, it really is. I've learned that. Because without action, Albert Einstein once said, you know, you cannot solve your problems at the same level as thinking as though you created them. You know, I can't think my way into a better way of life. You know, my best thinking got me here in the first place. But I can act my way into a better way of life. You know, and I once heard a guy say, it was a share tape that I did, and I've heard many share tapes, you know, they were a great resource to me. So if you are new, you can't get to a meeting, go to the Trafalgar Square speaker meeting, as you've heard Shelley say there, you know, give yourself a break. And I learned a lot of the literature and, you know, stuff like that, what was going on in the world by listening to shares. But he said, if you think what you've always thought, then you're always going to feel the way you've always felt. And if you always feel the way you've always felt, then you're always going to act the way you've always acted. And if you always act the way you've always acted, then you're always going to get what you've always got. And if you always get what you've always got, then you're always going to think what you've always thought. I love you, my name's Richard. I'm a grateful recovered addict, and I'll leave you there. Thank you.